advisement and move to the final case of the day, Ponte versus Briani.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Hold on just a moment here. We're losing our audience.
Appointment to a university?
I guess. All right, Mr.
Solomon. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, John Solomon on behalf of Gilbert Aponte. As this circuit observed in its 1997 opinion in Hyde v. Small, it's impossible unless there's an expectation of a fee award, and often not then, to interest a competent lawyer in bringing a suit in federal court to recover a small amount of damages unless the plaintiff is a rich person. In this case, Gilbert Aponte brought a Section 1983 action against four City of Chicago police officers, as well as a state law indemnification claim against the City of Chicago, alleging that the officer's execution of a valid judicially issued search warrant was conducted in an unreasonable manner, thus constituting an unreasonable search. The crux of Aponte's damages claim was simply that the defendant officers damaged his rental home and property, personal property located therein, in the amount of $10,000.
And he claimed emotional distress, what, $15,000, something like that?
He did seek emotional distress damages of $15,000 in his prayer for relief at the in the closing arguments, Your Honor.
Right. Sort of what I used to refer to as blackboarding. The figures were put up there as to what
Much he should have gotten. They weren't put on the blackboard, but effectively they were in the rebuttal portion of the closing argument.
All right. So what does the $100 relate to? Was there a piece of evidence that the jurors could have latched on to say, well, this is really a $100 case?
There was no specific allocation in the trial testimony
Didn't have a medical bill for $100 or...
No. With respect to the emotional...
Furniture and furnishings and such, that was roughly $10,000, right?
That's correct. Plaintiff's landlord presented a receipt for purchasing replacement furniture, and both plaintiff testified that he paid his landlord $10,000 in consideration for that purchase. There wasn't a specific allocation anywhere for $100 for any particular piece of personal property.
So I guess what I'm getting at, that seems like a nominal amount to me. See, I don't know whether you want to call it that or sort of de minimis or minimal or technical or whatever you call it. It's not really compensatory in the sense of repaying him for some specific damage.
I mean, the court raises a fair question. There wasn't any specific breakdown.
You said that today's $100 bill is what it used to be, $1.
Well, certainly there is an effect for inflation, but I think what needs to be recognized here is that there's a strong distinction between nominal damages, and as that term is used as a term of art in many of the cases, which reflect an absence of proof of actual compensable harm suffered by a civil rights plaintiff. I mean, proving damages is not a necessary element of a civil rights claim. And in cases where that is not proven, the nominal damages are essentially a substitute to reflect the change of the party's position.
So the standard instruction is nominal damages in the amount of $1, which is what the judge gave here. But so would it, if the award had been $2, would that have been a compensatory award entitling?
Well, yes, certainly a small compensatory award. But our position is that anything where the jury finds in favor of the plaintiff.
Anything other than $1?
Anything other than $1 is a finding that the plaintiff suffered compensable harm as a result of the unconstitutional actions. Certainly the jury, I mean, there's no contesting it. The jury didn't find that Mr. Aponte suffered substantial monetary harm as a result of the unconstitutional actions, but I think fundamentally there's a giant leap between the $1 finding of no harm suffered to $100, which is he did suffer harm.
That's
$99.
It's hard for me to see, really. I guess I'm lacking in imagination, my colleague points out, but it just seems to me to be...
As a matter of principle, our position...
Very nominal, technical amount, almost.
As a matter of principle, our position is that it's much more than simply a $99 increase. It's a shift that not only were Mr. Aponte's Fourth Amendment rights to be free from an unreasonable search violated, he actually suffered damages as a result of the law enforcement officer's actions.
Was there a portion of the verdict form that the jurors could mark if the award was a nominal, the $1 award you talk about?
The verdict form, as I recall, had two columns, one of which provided for compensable damages, which could have been a dollar under the circuit's pattern instruction, and the other was check the box and mark anything with respect to punitive damages, which the jury declined to do with respect to all defendants.
What do you all think a reasonable fee would have been in this case?
Well, the fee petition submitted was based upon the Lodestar approach and an hourly rate. I think $300 an hour for both trial counsel.
And it was the work done with respect to all four or five defendants, right? I mean, it wasn't broken out just as to Adriani and the particular portion of the indemnification for him. It was everybody, every issue.
That's right. It was all issues.
Damages as well as compensatory damages.
It was all work done in connection with the case. I mean,
every hour spent on the case, right?
It was. It was, Your Honor. The common core of the claims were the Fourth Amendment violation. The second count was the allegation of failure to intervene. And then the remaining count was the state law claim for indemnification by the city of Chicago. But all the work done related to the officer's actions and alleged inactions at the scene of the search warrant that day.
The request was from $116,000.
That's based on
a $100 verdict against one of four defendants, where the blackboarded number was in excess of $100,000, right? With the punitive damages requested.
It was, Your Honor.
Okay. You've relied on Hyde against Small and the observations in that case about the need for fair compensation for attorneys who take modest cases. Let me ask you to address the defense response to Hyde, which in essence, as I take it, is, look, if you approach it as a modest case and you get a modest verdict, you can get a reasonable fee. But if you shoot for the moon and come up with a $100 verdict on compensatory damages, then the Farrar against Hobby analysis indicates that really no fee is reasonable.
Right. In response to your question, Your Honor, I don't believe that the record in the trial in this indicated at any point was Mr. Aponte shooting for the moon. And in fact, in the briefing on the underlying motion for attorney's fees, the City of Chicago and counsel acknowledged that there was never any willingness to settle this action. And essentially, from the moment that Mr. Aponte filed this action contending that his civil rights had been violated, there was a policy decision that this was going to be defended. So whether Mr. Aponte asked for 1,000 in the rebuttal portion of the argument, 10,000, 100,000, it was always going to that stage. And so our position is that it's unfair to compare what Mr. Aponte's trial lawyer asked for in rebuttal to say that that was somehow what he was shooting for in the case, given that there was unwillingness.
Why is that unfair?
Because the defendants never indicated any willingness to try to resolve this action with Mr. Aponte. If there was some evidence in the underlying case that Mr. Aponte was somehow forcing this case to trial to shoot for the moon, then perhaps that would make sense. But if there's a policy decision made to defend this through trial, what Mr. Aponte prayed for at the closing argument was not relevant to deciding whether this was going to a closing argument. Further, the defendants never availed themselves of Rule 68 to try to cut off any reasonable attorney's fees following a denial. So there are plenty of tools available to the defendants to limit a substantial difference between the fee petition and the amount awarded.
Was there a prayer amount in the complaint?
There was not, Your Honor.
What about during the pretrial process? Was there a demand figure identified?
There was not. There was never any specific itemized demand at any point by Mr. Ponte. And in fact, the defendants were unwilling to engage in a negotiation during the pretrial.
As far as the judge knows, the first knowledge to the judge about what it was Mr. Ponte was asking for dollar-wise was in the final argument?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
Yep.
You got about 30 seconds left.
I'm going to reserve my then remaining time to rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Reserved minutes.
Mr. Gentithis? Or
Gentithis.
Gentithis?
Very close.
Thank you.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Mr. Ponte brought an eight-claim Section 1983 suit against the City of Chicago and four of its officers. He sought $125,000 in damages from the jury in that suit. He achieved only minimal success, receiving a $100 award on one of his eight claims. On those facts, the district court was well within its discretion to deny Mr. Ponte the attorney's fees he seeks today. First, the district court acted within its discretion to apply the three-factor Farrar test to Mr. Aponte's petition for attorney's fees because his award was only technical or de minimis. Second, under those three factors, the court was within its discretion to determine that the only reasonable attorney's fee award for Mr. Aponte was no attorney's fees at all.
You say it was technical or de minimis. Was it nominal?
The City of Chicago does not rely on its categorization as nominal.
Or is there a difference between...
Is there?
Those categories...
Nominal.
Those categories may not be coextensive, Your Honor.
The
Farrar case...
Wise.
I'm sorry?
At least not percentage-wise or incapable of being discussed.
The Farrar case turns on whether the award received was technical or de minimis. Nominal is used in that decision, but what determines whether the three-part test outlined in that case should be applied rather than the full lodestar analysis is whether the award was technical or de minimis. The award that the jury gave Mr. Aponte here, $100 on one of his eight claims, was clearly meant to signal only a technical victory after seeking some $125,000 from the jury. This court has applied the three-factor Farrar test in situations where a plaintiff has sought even less and achieved even more. For instance, where a plaintiff has sought $75,000 and obtained a $140 judgment, or a plaintiff has sought $100,000 and obtained a $420 award. In each of those cases, this court has approved of the district court's application of the three-part Farrar test.
Is that the right perspective to use here, though? Shouldn't we just look at what was claimed against Adriani, $25,000 as opposed to $125,000? Because that's the only portion of the case in which he was a prevailing party.
No, Your Honor. The total blackboard amount, the total ask from the jury is what's relevant here. That included $10,000 in damages to his personal property, $15,000 in emotional damages, as well as $25,000 in punitive damages against each of the four officers.
Punitive.
Punitive damages and against each
Not
of the four
damages.
Officers. $10,000 in property, $15,000 in emotional, and then $25,000 in punitive against each. The total ask was $125,000. As I said, Farrar does not turn on the categorization of the award Mr. Aponte eventually received as nominal. The controlling issue is whether or not those fees, or rather that award, was merely technical or de minimis. There's
counsel,
no appeal from the merits.
Counsel, in your view, is the problem of drawing a line between lodestar calculation and the Farrar against Hobby technical or nominal award, is drawing that line a matter that we should leave to district judge's discretion, or is that a question of law?
It is in the district court's discretion.
Why?
Mm-hmm. As this court has acknowledged, generally, review of a determination on attorney's fees is for an abuse of discretion because the district court is going to be more familiar with the
factual, procedural history. In general, that's right, but we do expect the district judges to get the law right. So,
correct.
So why is this particular question, why should we treat that as discretionary as opposed to legal?
It's a factually intensive inquiry whether the award received was technical or de minimis. The district court's going to be most familiar with those facts and the procedural history in the case below. Ultimately, what this court is reviewing is the district court's application of clearly controlling precedent. That application alone should not warrant searching review. If that were the case, nearly every case before this court would be reviewed de novo. The sort of principle of law that might control the outcome of the case is not an issue here. It's simply the application of controlling precedent outlined by the Supreme Court in Farrar. Under the three factors of Farrar, it's clear that the district court did not abuse its discretion to deny Mr. Aponte's Section 1988 motion for fees. The three factors the court should consider under that test are the difference between the amount recovered and the amount sought, the legal significance of the issue on which the plaintiff did eventually prevail, and any broader public purpose which was served by the litigation. The first of those three is the most important, and it's the most strikingly against Mr. Aponte's motion for fees. He sought $125,000 in damages from the jury. He received only $100 on one of his eight claims. The Hyde case, to which Mr. Aponte cites, is not similar to his case. In that case, the attorney did not seek a specific amount from the jury, and furthermore received a $500 award, five times more than that Mr. Aponte received. It's clear that a modest approach, which is followed by a modest award, may entitle a petitioner to attorney's fees.
Modest attorney's fees.
And this was not a modest case. This was one which Mr. Aponte from the outset believed was valuable. He was not forced in any way to seek $125,000 from the jury. That was his decision. He ultimately received only $100. That is not challenged today.
So what do you think the $100 relates to?
As Your Honor pointed out, it's not specifically tied to any damaged property or any specific damages suffered by Mr. Aponte.
Could the jury have misplaced its decimal point or failed to put one in?
That's certainly possible, Your Honor. That's not what the city relies on here. A $100 award, prima facie, does not necessarily entitle Mr. Aponte to attorney's fees. And given the circumstances of this case, that $100 award was merely a technical or de minimis finding in his favor. Furthermore, the issue on which Mr. Aponte succeeded was not legally significant. It was merely the reasonableness of the officer's search under what both parties acknowledge was a legally valid warrant. That sort of reasonableness judgment is something juries reach all the time. It's not breaking any new legal ground. And finally, there was no broader public purpose which was served by this litigation. At most, Mr. Aponte simply vindicated a minor transgression on his civil rights. There was
well, I
no...
Well, this isn't how searches are ordinarily conducted.
In what sense, Your Honor?
Ripping the place up, ripping the furniture up.
That was Mr. Aponte's allegation. He provided no proof that the furniture in his house was substantially damaged or turned to matchsticks, essentially, as he claimed. The actual furniture was never produced at any point during discovery or at trial.
They had some photographs.
There were photographs produced which did not show, and the witnesses for Mr. Aponte, both his landlord and his girlfriend, acknowledged that they did not show the damages they described in those photographs. There is no broader public purpose being served by this litigation because there simply was no broader message being sent to the city of Chicago. There were no punitive damages. There was no injunction or declaratory relief here that would merit the sort of attorney's fee award Mr. Aponte is seeking today. If the court has no further questions, the city would ask that the district court's decision be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Solon, I'm going to guess you have a minute. We'll
all right.
Round it up to a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly, with respect to the standard of review, our position is that the appropriate standard of review is the de novo standard. What is challenged here is the district court's decision to apply Farrar as an additional requirement here to the fee petition. That is based upon a legal principle.
And so you read Farrar as limited to $1 and $2 and up, it's Lodestar.
Well,
as a matter of law.
I read that, including the evolution of this circuit's opinions construing Farrar. There appears to be more of a bright line that has been drawn where if actual compensable damages are pled and proved, Farrar is not applicable.
Don't we have cases that say it's an abuse of discretion standard, like Leffler versus Meir back in 95?
The cases dealing with the abuse of discretion standard appear to be focused on the district court's application of the Farrar factors themselves. Our issue really is one step removed from that. Farrar shouldn't have been considered by the district court in the first place. As a result, the district court's imposition of Farrar, we believe that the court erred legally, and this court should reverse the district court's order and remand for further consideration. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to all counsel, and we will now.